you know, as we've seen in other contexts around the world, the military in some ways has been given carte blanche by the Trump administration. We've seen a loosening of restrictions in Somalia, and I think we're seeing a ramp up of the American-backed war there. More U.S. boots on the ground. There was an American Special Operations Forces soldier killed there recently, two others injured. I think we're going to see more of that. Of course, there are U.S. forces still on the ground in Libya, troops that are in Western Africa aiding the fight against Boko Haram. So it's early to see exactly what the Trump administration is doing. I think there isn't a real heavily coordinated policy with Africa. But I think we're going to see a ramp up, more troops on the ground, more bases. And this has been the way that things have been going for years now.
And we just have 15 seconds. But the danger journalists face going to South Sudan, I mean, the people in South Sudan obviously clearly face massive danger.
Definitely. Local journalists face the most difficulties. They're threatened, detained, tortured, even killed, and no one's ever been held responsible. But the crackdowns against foreign journalists have become greater. More and more people are being accused of being spies. I was myself threatened with jail. NPR's Ida Peralta was accused of the same and actually jailed there. They banned about 20 foreign reporters, people who know the country best. So it's become a difficult environment.
Well, Nick, we're going to link to your article at Ghost Nation, and that does it for our broadcast. A very happy birthday to Karen Ranucci. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke. Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek. Happy to be with you today on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. So much going on in our community, and we have only an hour to talk about Dearborn and the surrounding area and give you a few opinions, not only from yours truly, but also from other people as they express it in the newspapers and on various credible websites. Remember that all opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, students, administrators, or staff. And they don't tell us what to say. Thank you very much. But we do try to be balanced as best possible. There's so many ways to be balanced, and there's always a difference of opinion on that, but we don't try to give just one opinion or do any character assassination either. And that's tough, let me tell you, with the current standard of so-called journalists on the internet, especially, and certain cable TV news shows doing not just opinion, but raw opinion. That's what I call it, raw. Because they do character assassination right and left, and say things that have not been supported, otherwise known as lies. And I believe that's true of a lot. And it's not just the liberals. It's not just the conservatives. There's a lot of people out there, because there's so many people, because of social media especially, that have opinions. And, well, they should. But should you believe those opinions if they have no argument, no facts behind those opinions? We can't run this place on emotion alone. I'm sorry. It's going to fall apart. It's going to blow up in our faces. There has to be some reason. Okay. Well, so the first story we're going to look at, first we're going to talk about the Dearborn Public Schools, then we're going to talk about Dearborn Heights Public Schools, and then we're going to talk about Dearborn Heights and something that happened over there. Those are the top stories, so we're getting into it right now. The Dearborn Board of Education has appointed Celia Nasser. That's S-S. That's C-E-L-I-A. That's how you spell her first name. Remember last week, my printout from the Arab American News didn't print fully, and so I missed her first name. My apologies to her. Celia Nasser is the new school board member. But it was quite a drama. And there is a complete story, which is very similar to the, there's two complete stories. One is in Press and Guide, pressandguide.com, and the other is on ArabAmericanNews.com. And both are very well written. Arab American News does go a little bit further in printing out the actual, there was legal challenges and issues. They printed out actually for your edification, the relevant portions of the Michigan election law, the revised school code, board bylaws, Robert's Rules of Order, and a transcript of a portion of the June 12th meeting. Wow. So they did an extremely complete job, but Katie Hetrick's been doing that job for, more than a decade, certainly. I don't want to age her unnecessarily here. She's doing a fantastic job. So I'm going to read from her story, first of all. Celia Nasser was sworn in as the newest member of the board on Monday night, even though the current trustees said they didn't realize that they actually appointed her to the position last week. Trustee Hussein Berry spent an hour fighting the appointment, arguing that he did not, quote-unquote, abstain when he refused to take part in the process last week for appointing a new trustee and that he was never actually called on during that meeting to vote. That came after board attorney Timothy Currier explained that the board's bylaws say any abstention has to be counted with the majority vote. So if you abstain, this is rules of order, okay, and the board's bylaws, if you say I abstain, then that is counted as a vote for the majority or to make a majority. So that means the two motions on April 12th to appoint Nasser were actually approved. At the time, trustees Fadwa Hamoud and Michael Mead, along with board president Mary Lane, all voted for the businesswoman Nasser. Trustees Jim Thorpe and Mary Petrikoff supported former trustee Roxanne McDonald. Four votes, a majority of the board, were needed to appoint a new trustee. With three yes votes and one that was counted as an abstention, Nasser received the needed four votes. He stated, that is, Barry stated, how do we make a decision in an open meeting without knowing we made a decision? That's one of those great questions, right? He also continued to argue that he never said the word abstain and that he was never actually called on to vote at that meeting. Hamoud reminded Berry that Lane asked at the beginning of last week's discussion if he was going to continue to refrain from participating in the appointment, and he said he was. Hamoud said, you don't have to utter the words abstain for you to abstain from the vote. Unquote. Lane asked Currier if Nasser was legally appointed last week. Currier said, that's a legal appointment, yes. Berry continued to argue and supported a motion by Petrikoff to try to hold the appointment decision until the board could discuss and vote on the matter again, as planned for this week's meeting. However, after more discussion, Lane called Nasser forward, clarified she had already signed the legal paperwork, and then swore her in as Berry continued to yell. My goodness. About 100 people attended the meeting with arguments on both sides of the issues, intermittently drawing applause. When public comments were allowed later in the meeting, several speakers expressed disappointment at the board's actions. Berry questioned why Lane and consultant Michael Wilmot did not explain the abstaining rule before the vote. Lane said it only occurred to her after the meeting that there might be some provision for abstentions. Officials had looked up district, county, and even state policy regarding filling an empty school board position, but the abstaining rule was in a different part of the policy. The board's abstention policy only applies if the trustee does not have a reason recognized by state law for abstaining, such as conflict of interest. Ooh. And Barry did not want to, I remember prior stories, trustee Barry did not want to state his reasons for abstaining. Or for not participating. That's literally what he said. Currier noted the policy was approved even before Superintendent Glenn Maleko was even out of high school. More than 20 years ago, I guess. I'm just guessing here. Quote from Currier, under your own policy, you don't have the right to just not participate in the process. Berry argued, I specifically said I am not engaging in the process. I never once said I was abstaining from the process. Currier countered Berry's argument that he was never asked for his vote. If you wanted to vote, said Currier, why didn't you raise your hand and say, I wanted to vote? case it felt it was missed. Lane said the 30-day window for the board to appoint a trustee expired soon, and the board had legally already appointed a new trustee. The district could face legal consequences for not abiding by its own vote. Berry said the appointment process is tainted, which is why I did not want to participate. Berry said, quote, right now we're getting played by someone that is bigger than all of us, unquote. Adding that he plans to call his own attorney and the state attorney general's office to get involved. Thorpe said the process left a bad taste in his mouth, and he felt the spirit of the appointment had been broken, even if the rules had not. Well, then, you know, your bad taste is you need some mouthwash, Jim. I mean, the law is the law. Okay, I'm sorry. That's my opinion, Jim Thorpe. I know you weren't for this candidate, but yes, people got mad. Well, one person got mad, really mad. You say, a person doesn't get mad, they get angry. Well, okay. Trustee Berry was extremely angry and not listening to what the explanation of the laws were. And the laws are the laws in this case, the rules are the rules. And Petrikoff, in making her motion to hold the appointment, says, quite frankly, I don't care if this goes to Wayne Risa or not. Ooh. Unquote. Hamoud, though, said she continued to stand by her vote and board members should not complain later when things did not turn out as they expected. She sacrifices time with her family to be on the board and takes that responsibility seriously. She said, quote, I don't leave my kids at home for somebody else to make my decisions. Unquote. By that point in the meeting, Berry was increasingly yelling over other speakers, accusing the board, accusing the appointment of being political games. And, quote, he said, we are going to sit here as adults and pretend nothing is going on. That's ridiculous. Unquote. He said community members had asked for a meeting with him over the weekend to pressure him into supporting Nassar. Lane asked Currier if Nassar's appointment could legally be put on hold, but Berry yelled over the attorney as he tried to respond. Berry launched into more political accusations, including that political factions in the community said one of the board members, quote, was bought and paid for, unquote, and that hundreds of thousands of dollars are now spent on board elections. Shortly after that, Lane called Nassar up to be sworn in, with Berry still yelling as she began her oath. Public comments came after the appointment. Agnes Fisher said, how embarrassing. You should be so embarrassed for yourselves, unquote. She went on to say to Nassar that she should be embarrassed for accepting the position. Lane, however, cut in and reminded Fisher of the rules regarding public comments. If you want to talk to the board, you will not address individual trustees and you will not engage in public shaming, said Lane. She reminded other speakers that what they say could be taken as libel, such as Abbas Farhat suggesting trustees' votes had been bought. Abdullah Alandri said, I feel a huge disrespect for the people here, unquote. And these are comments, again, from people who attended in the audience for that meeting. He, too, was cut off as he tried to accuse individual board members of personal politics. Charles McDonald, husband of former trustee Roxanne McDonald, said that while the board appointed a qualified candidate, she was not the most qualified candidate. Well, of course, he's a little biased in this, isn't he, folks? I mean, that's my little tossed-in insight. He's obviously in favor of Roxanne McDonald, since he's her husband. Good for him. He supported his wife. He said, I believe the vote is null and void for one reason. No one knew what a so-called abstention was. And, of course, here comes Jay Koronick saying, if you don't know what the rules are and you're on a commission and a board, if you don't know the rules, or you don't ask the chair, at least, about the rules, you shouldn't be on that commission. You should look up and read the rules of the meeting. That is the charter of the board, the board's bylaws. That's your responsibility, okay? And obviously, a few people on the board had not done full research. And after they took these actions, then they discovered what the rules really were and what the laws really were that applied to the situation. And they had to appoint Celia Nassar. Katie Hetrick, who doesn't usually use four-letter words, she uses one to close the, and it's a comment from Charles McDonald, but I can't use it on the air because it has a four-letter word in it that, it's not the word duck. No, he said duck something else, but anyway, can't use that here. WHFR broadcast rules protects you from that. So for Katie to actually include that, it must have been pretty frustrating for her. She's usually very balanced. And the reason I read that was because, and it wasn't mentioned here in her story, and that was good, some people were saying that the Arab American Political Action Committee was influencing the process. Somehow they felt unduly. But of course, it's the right for every political action group, every rich person, poor person, whatever, to try to influence the decisions and to talk to individual board members about their vote to come. That's the American way. That's why we have thousands of lobbyists in Washington, D.C., and hundreds of them in Lansing who are trying to affect the nature of the votes of our elected representatives. Now, you can't ban all lobbying because some lobbyists actually do something valuable, and that is educate the elected representative about things they weren't aware of. They give them a point of view, it's true, not the full and balanced picture because they're a lobbyist for one interest, but they give them information, hopefully all factual, that will help them make their decision either for or against some issue or person or whatever. So I'm not against all lobbyists because lobbying, one way or the other, such as writing a letter to your congressman or sending them a text or email or something, that's lobbying. Not professional lobbying, but it's trying to interact and influence the outcome of the vote or start an action that might be lead to a vote by your elected representative. So there you are. And that's what we have. And so that's why I didn't read the story, which is well-written, well-balanced from the Arab American News, because somebody might say, well, Arab American News, of course they slant it. No, they didn't. And in fact, I thought very upfront, they actually went one step further than the Press and Guide and published the significant rules. You can read them for yourself, Arab American News. And yes, I did find out how to print out the story so I wouldn't lose anything. They have a complete Arab American News newspaper, including the ads and the Arabic versions and so on, right there on their website too, arabamericannews.com. If you open that as a multi-page PDF file, you can print out whatever pages you want. You don't have to print them all out. There's ways to just print a couple of pages at a time, and that's what I did, and they print out just beautifully. So sorry I mentioned last week arabamericannews.com should come up with a print command like they have at the Press and Guide for each individual story, although I don't know if it would cost them more than 10 cents to do that. But nonetheless, I found a way, and it's on their website. You can print out the total edition if you want to. All the pages, in fact, of the current issue, which is free and distributed usually on a Saturday. It may be somewhere today on Friday, but it's today is June 26th. Did I mention that when I started? June 26th. And this issue supposedly is dated June 24th through 30th. So what does that tell you? That tells you that, did they print on Wednesday? I thought the print version was only distributed on Saturday. Maybe it takes a while to get it printed. So maybe the full version is available on their website, at least on the 24th. It's on Friday anyway. It's there, I know, because that's what I use. So take a look at that. Okay, see what you think. Now, I will go and include the editorial opinion of the Arab American News about this incident at the Dearborn Board of Education this last week, just to get their side of it, which I did mention. They had a small opinion last week in an article, I think, that I shared with you. But this is their editorial opinion about this event, and here it goes. Much has been said and written about the Dearborn Board of Education candidates and the process to appoint a successor to now Judge Mariam Bazzi. Most of the rants on social media centered around a couple of themes. Adel Mossip should get Bazzi's former seat because he received 11,000 votes during the last election, which he lost anyway. The other theme concerned the conspiracy theories swirling around the role allegedly played by the Arab American PAC, that is the Political Action Committee. during the process. But there is another plausible theory out there. But first, let us talk about the rants and screams. First of all, the process to appoint a successor to fill a vacant board seat is clearly spelled out under Michigan law and addressed in the bylaws of the Dearborn Board of Education. Trustee Hussein Berry's abstention during the June 12th meeting counts as a vote with the majority bylaws. Check the bylaws there. And Barry, his defenders and supporters claim that he did not know about this before voting, but ignorance of the law is not an excuse. I think I was implying that. I didn't use the word ignorance, though. He has been on the board, that's Hussein Barry, on and off since 2009. 8 years, folks. He should know the consequence of his choice. As for whether he abstained or not, he clearly did, as evidenced by his answer to the facilitator on June 12th. And they mention here, it's on video on YouTube, board meeting June 12th, part 3, starting around minute 21 minutes and 10 seconds in. As for why the first loser of the last election does not automatically get selected, it is not state law. We brought that up here on the show. City of Dearborn council elections. Well, the city of Dearborn has its own charter and its own rules, therefore, about what to do. Okay, so this is state law, though. It does not, it says here, of course, it's not in the bylaws and it does not make sense, according to the Arab American News editorial opinion, considering the board trustees are elected in different years and not all at the same time, where it would be easy to select the eighth person, as is the case with the Dearborn City Council. Good point. This fall, you're going to be electing the Dearborn City Council completely, all seven people. And there'll be at least 14 candidates in November. 16 candidates right now, and that'll be reduced after the primary election by two. Not much of a reduction, is it? But two names who come out with the least votes in the primary election in August will not be included in November. So out of 14 candidates, you pick seven, and they all start and run for the same term all at the same time. So yes, there is more logic in taking the person that came in number eight in that situation. But because if you look back, I mean, what about the person that didn't win but was just one vote down or something a couple of years ago for Dearborn Board of Education? But they didn't run the last time around. So where would you go there? I think that's a very good point, totally valid, is that it doesn't even make sense to do it that way because of staggered terms and therefore staggered elections. As for why, the Arab American News goes on to say, as for why the first loser of the last election does not automatically get selected, it's not state law. Well, we just said that. Next paragraph. That being said, here is a logical theory as to what really happened. Barry wanted his close friend, Roxanne McDonald, to get on the board, especially because of the important decisions coming up, such as the selection of a new Henry Ford College president, as Barry himself said at the last meeting. He also wants her back because he owes her. Number one, she did not run last year, which cleared the way for him to win a seat on the board. Number two, he advised / convinced her to run for state rep against now state rep Abdallah Hamoud. The truth is, Mr. Barry wants McDonald back on the Board of Education, but he could not overtly vote for her because of two reasons. One, it is well known that she voted against the late Imad Fadala, whom he claims was his friend and quote-unquote brother. And two, because he needs to make the Yemeni community believe that he supports Adel Mosip, which he clearly doesn't. Now, they're, of course, I can't say guessing at that. They may know about it from third-party innuendo or backroom conversations, but that's their opinion there. And I do see that could be certainly interpreted by an outside person like myself that he was beholden. He had reasons why he wanted Roxanne McDonald, certainly. And of course, I say, if he felt that way about her, why didn't he vote for her? Why did he pull out of the process? It would have been tied 3-3. He made a very bad tactical decision there. Going on at the Arab American newspaper's editorial, For his part, Mozip and his supporters seem to have been played by Berry from the get-go. Mozip was told that the Arab American Political Action Committee fixed the process, but that's in quotes, fixed the process, whatever that means, and secured 4 votes before the process even started. These were the words Berry used in discussions with community leaders. It is not far-fetched to think he spread the rumor. So Mozip enters the process with guns blazing, firing everything at everyone, and launching accusations instead of just promoting his candidacy. Because they could have chosen him if he made a good presentation of his willingness to serve. I guess he made less than an interesting presentation. I don't know. That's the implication here again by this editorial, which is the opinion only of the Arab American News, not mine, not Henry Ford College, remember. I'm going on, though, with because it's well stated from at least the point of view of the editor, maybe the publisher, editor-in-chief, Osama Sablani. Berry and his inner circle, read Nofila Hadar and Company, pitted Mozip against Celia Nasser in an attempt to make McDonald look like the non-controversial candidate. Let me just go back and mention to you that I've seen that name, Nofila Hadar, somewhere else here. Let's see. All right. Looking at the voter guide, yes, she is running for city clerk. I saw her just earlier this week, and I'm going to make a report on the two League of Women Voters Dearborn Heights candidate forums, too, since I was in attendance. Didn't write up a story, didn't post it on Facebook, but I will mention the high points of the meetings. I'm not saying who I thought the favorite candidates should be, but I will mention the high points and mention names on who said those things, and you can draw some conclusions from that. Neither one of those Dearborn candidate forums for mayor, city clerk, and city council, those happened this week, and neither are posted yet on the City of Dearborn CDTV On Demand website. I checked this morning anyway. Maybe by later today, who knows? They're supposed to be there soon. So you should watch those if you're an interested voter here in Dearborn. Anyway, so Berry and his inner circle pitted Mozip against Celia Nasser in an attempt to make McDonald look like a non-controversial candidate. What a game, says the Arab American News. Berry first moves to send the process to Wayne Risa, thereby abdicating his responsibility and showing willingness to let someone else make the decision for him. He probably thought that Risa would pick McDonald because she is a former board member and has friends there. Oh. When his motion did not even get a second, he decided to abstain without a clear legal justification other than saying, on advice of counsel. That's a direct quote. One wonders what counsel did he use that did not point out to him the consequences of his abstention, is the question raised by Arab American News. So Berry abstains, and the 3-2 vote in favor of Nasser becomes a 4-2 vote with his abstention, and she is seated. The plot to seat McDonald or to pass the buck to Wayne Risa fails, but what remains is the divisions created in the process. Mozip and many in the Yemeni community are now angry and think that there is some, quote, Lebanese plot, unquote, against them. Sadly, there was, says the Arab American News, but it was the plot by Hussein Berry and his circle. Hopefully, this community can heal soon and move forward to tackle the real issues it is facing, starting with too many deaths from car accidents and substance abuse. That's the opinion of the Arab American News. Probably editor-in-chief Osama Sablani wrote that. Something to think about, right? I totally agree with the final thing. I mean, some people were pointing out even that the Democrats and Republicans are about at odds and as much actually coming to fisticuffs, perhaps, or other kinds of violence to one another, as the Sunni and Shiites in Iraq. I think that's going a little too far. Sunnis and Shiites are actually shooting and bombing. And whoever is right there, doesn't matter to me, a pacifist, you know. What about the Protestants and Catholics in Ireland? Doesn't matter to me. They're both wrong. You don't kill. You don't shoot. You work things out. You're either civilized or you're not. If you're not civilized, go and live on a desert island somewhere. Find a jungle, if there is one left somewhere, and live by yourself in the jungle. Civilization, if there is such a thing, and we want there to be one somewhere, can't have these kinds of rifts. You work out the issues. You work out the problems. You don't start yelling. And certainly don't get even more violent. And what they suggested here, that there's a Yemeni versus Lebanese rift, in terms of the candidates, at least for the Dearborn Board of Ed. Give me a break. Okay. Stop it. Forget about it. Certainly politics, even the little teeny bit of influence from the least important of all of our elected politicians, and that is the Board of Education people, or Board of Trustees of HFC in this case, two same people, two jobs, shouldn't have this big a deal, right? Oh, politics. There's greed and there's ego. Even on this littlest of part-time job, which needs to be done well for the future of our children, yes, but it's paid like practically not quite as well as working at McDonald's, I believe. Your best first job is not Board of Education. Let me just put it that way. You think you're a big deal because you got elected to the Board of Education. It's a very important position, no doubt about that. But it's the least of all of our political jobs in terms of responsibility, in terms of responsibility for numbers of people and budget. Okay? I mean, come on. And so these things shouldn't happen. This should be a collaboration for the good of our community, for the good of our children, and people have to wake up. Now, I have some personal thoughts, too, about some of the people on the board. And their general attitude and their level of intelligence as expressed by their actions and their words over the years. But I'm not going to say that because I don't do that in this show. We'll let other people say that. But notice I haven't dipped into the social media accusations. Okay. What's in the newspapers is reasoned. Okay. And yes, the newspapers could be sued for libel themselves if they weren't careful. Okay, so they can't cast aspersions. They have to stick to the facts. And so that's why I go with this situation. But social media, they can say anything they want to, won't be liable because it's all just opinion. That's right. You can't sue people for crazy opinions or any kind of opinions. I mean, there's freedom of speech. Yes, there is. But when you're trying to figure out what's the best way to run a school system, and what the best people are to do that, you need to be objective, and you need to be collaborative. And, well, that's my opinion. Okay. About halfway through the hour, this is the new WHFR Journal. Local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Onward. What's happening in Dearborn Heights? I moved away to Dearborn Heights for a second to grab the stories. Well, they had a little issue with appointing their new D7 school superintendent over there. Well, the title of it is Negotiations and Revote Result in Mast Appointed as the new D7 school superintendent. So that's over and done with. But here's the story. After a public negotiation session and another vote, Dearborn Heights School District Number 7 has a new superintendent, Jennifer Mast. A special open Board of Education meeting was held Monday of this week to renegotiate Mast's contract after the two sides were deadlocked over an initial offer. Board President Marsha Labar said the public negotiation session differed from the norm, but provided beneficial for everyone, the district in particular. Quote, Labar said, "We sat down and talked with Jen," first name of the new superintendent, "and she made a couple more concessions and the board made a couple more concessions. There was a definite movement on both ends." Unquote. Mast and members of the ad hoc committee formed to negotiate her contract. had been at odds over several issues, including salary, contract length, an automobile allowance, a tax shelter annuity, and the option for Mass to be paid for frozen sick days. I'm not sure what a frozen sick day is. You're sick because you're frozen? I think they mean closed. Or maybe frozen sick day just refers to I really don't know what that means. Frozen, stuck in the contract? I don't know. I haven't heard that term. Anyway, the option for Mass to be paid for frozen sick days from her teaching contract. From her teaching contract. Mass made concessions in the latter two areas, but stood firm on salary and deleting a clause allowing the board to transfer her at any time to another administrative position in the district. Ooh. You can fire me, but you can't transfer me back anywhere else. That has happened here at Henry Ford College. Some of our administrators have been transferred. And I'm not sure they asked for it. I don't know. I'm just saying high-level administrators were transferred here in the last couple of months. Well, one in particular. I can't say there's more than one. And they raised some questions in the mind of the people on the bottom, like myself. A mere adjunct teacher, also doing a little part-time administrative work with Henry Ford College's state radio station, the one to which you are listening. But so I don't get all I'm not part of all the high-level discussions or explanations. Usually there isn't any explanations for things that happen administratively. And, of course, by contract and the state of Michigan's laws that they've passed, the administration doesn't have to share or allow any negotiation or explanation with the faculty or staff. Isn't that nice? Used to be more collaborative, used to be part of our contracts. But the state of Michigan, our legislators, said, oh, no. Administrators, no, they don't have to share anything. They can do whatever they want to pretty much and not tell anybody or involve anybody. Just a couple places, like payment, salary. Well, thank you very much. But people won't collaborate unless they're forced to. Isn't that amazing? Shouldn't be that way. Even a well-run business, I think, should collaborate with its workers. Yeah, the buck stops at the top. I agree. But if you don't involve your workers, they're going to do bad work for you. Or they're going to leave and go somewhere else if they can find another job somewhere. So collaboration is always the best policy. Anyway, going on with the story from the Press and Guide a couple days ago, the 22nd. Okay, so that was actually Monday, but it was updated 17 hours ago from when I published it. So it was yesterday sometime, Thursday. We have the full picture here. You see, several board members for Dearborn Heights 7, this Dearborn Heights board 7 had expressed concern with Mast's lack of administrative level experience as a reason for not supporting her in the position. Under the newest contract, Mast agreed to a lesser salary of $125,000, and the board approved offering her a higher car allowance and a 3-year rolling or automatically renewing contract. And what that means is automatically renewing is they don't go through a reassessment and a reappointment. Gee, our superintendent here goes through that. Glenn Maleko just had to have a review, again, of his success as our superintendent. Board president. The president of Henry Ford College, Stan Jensen, goes through that review on some sort of basis. I don't think it's yearly, but this is automatically renewing. So he can either fire her at any time, I guess, in the future, or she's just going to stay there. Anyway, that was what they negotiated. And so Labar said, we just played with the numbers to make it work. I'm relieved. I feel like we can all start enjoying summer and looking forward to a great positive school year in the fall. It's been a long, rocky road, but we finally came to an agreement that both parties reached mutually. We made it work for the district, unquote. The story goes on. In the end, the board unanimously voted to approve the new contract at Tuesday's meeting. And I won't go over all the back and forth of why it didn't happen before now. We've covered that in previous shows. And remember, all of the Dearborn Dearborn's favorite local radio news show, the new WHFR Journal. All of our web podcasts are on our website. All of our podcasts are on our website of all of our previous shows, and I found out last week it goes back 7 years. Very embarrassing. All of our weekly shows for 7 years are saved there. So just pick a Friday, find the date, pick a Friday, and you can listen to it all over again. Or for the first time, if you missed the show, and it's live broadcast every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. Okay, the other story about Dearborn Heights is not about schools, but the Dearborn Heights, as reported in the Dearborn Heights Times-Herald from this last Wednesday, June 21st. Today's the 23rd, right? Yes. Why do you think it was 22nd? So the 22nd was yesterday, yes. They reported, and I didn't get a press and guide, even though I subscribed to one last Wednesday. So for the second time in a month, thank you very much for nothing on Wednesdays. You're not going to continue getting people to subscribe to your paper if they can't receive the paper. And it didn't come late. It didn't come. Okay, should I have called the office? Well, I'm thinking about it, maybe this afternoon, but the odds are there's nobody in the office this afternoon. They probably went all home early, so that's the Dearborn Press and Guide. Times Herald did arrive because they use, yes, the United States Postal Service, and pretty reliable, even though it takes a full day. Anyway, the story says that Dearborn Heights has okayed their purchase agreement for the golf course. That's the Warren Valley Golf Course. They agreed to a price of $1.8 million, and it passed unanimously with Councilwoman Marge Horvath not in attendance. She was absent. The agreement does not mean that the golf course is purchased quite yet, because they have to do what's called due diligence. In other words, for 2 months, they've paid $80,000 more to Alta. They're going to do a survey, this company, of the golf course and banquet center to see if there's, any problems with anything, any invasion of termites into the golf center or mole infestation under the golf course. It would cost an extra ton of money, whatever. And I think that's good. So anyway, if it's good there, then they bought it. So the council agreed right now to a 10% deposit of $180,000 while due diligence is going on, just to hold the deal. And turning to page 8A, it's the only news show on the air where you can hear the pages turning. That's right. Mayor Daniel Pletko said about this that during a closed session on June 6th, the council discussed that no development on the golf course property will take place because of the flooding. As due diligence is completed and more information is available. Boy, that's interesting. So how were these other buyers going to build condos there? Is it just a small area of the golf course that floods? They're going to dump a lot of trash or garbage to build a place up? I mean, that sounds terrible, but that's happened in other places. They use an area as a trash dump, and after 10 years of it settling and being ground down and so on, and degrading, biodegrading in one way or the other, they actually cover it up with dirt and sod, and can be anything again. So, but they're not going to do any development as the city. They're just going to try and keep it a golf course. And let's see, anything else there? Well, of course, it was designed by famous Scottish golf architect Donald Ross in 1922 and features not one but two 18-hole golf courses. It includes a clubhouse with a pro shop, the Ross Room Bar and Grill, and a full banquet center for hosting events. So make a lot of people in Dearborn Heights happy, except they're out $1.8 million now. But you know, they get the profits directly from operation of the golf course and the banquet center, and the, I don't know if they've farmed out the profits from the bar and grill, for the sake of the lease, or whether that person pays a lease or whatever, but that's going to happen too. Also have to mention now, it is Dearborn Heights, and I'll get to Dearborn, because that's a big story. Maybe I can't finish it. today. But Dearborn Heights election candidates did have a forum. The candidates did have a forum last week, not this week, but last week, and not everyone attended. Two of the three mayoral candidates showed up. This was done by one of the communities, one of the neighborhood communities had got together to set this up, not the League of Women Voters. That happened last night, the 22nd. And that will be, supposedly, it was videotaped and will be on the City of Dearborn Heights' YouTube channel as soon as they get that edited. So I was not able to attend that. In terms of the mayor, mayoral candidates, Crestwood School District Trustee Ed Garcia did not attend this one. On the city council side, six of the 10 candidates did show up. Mohamed Boudoun, Councilman Robert Constant, Denise Maxwell, Jeff Malad, Lisa Oshansky, and Tom Wenzel. But Ali Almuna, Netta Pigian, Bill Bazzi, and Thomas Berry were not in attendance. Remember, Berry's name will be on at least the August primary ballot, even though he has resigned. Well, he will resign at the end of his term. And I don't know when that is, this summer, but he said he's not going to run again, even though he took out the petition and got his name on the ballot. And then after it was on the ballot and he couldn't get it off, he said, I quit right then. And then he said, I don't quit right now. I want to stay board member until the end of my term. So he was welcomed back. But there's good reason why he didn't attend anyway, because he has said he didn't want to be reelected again at this point. That's what he said. No. So the forum was hosted by the Southwest Dearborn Heights Neighborhood Association. It was at the Richard A. Young Recreation Center, and it featured questions from residents in attendance with opening and closing statements. Hicks, Clayton, and Pileco answered a range of questions about improving city services, a five-day work week, community gardens, trash container sizes, transparency, city's biggest challenge, consolidated dispatch center, and the city's diverse community. One thing they did agree on is that the city should reinstate a five-day work week. And in fact, they said it's already being done. It's already in motion to change over. So the city council and the mayor's office, city council had included, doesn't still include Hicks Clayton. It's already in progress, so that's not really a question. Someday, we assume in the fall, a couple months, we assume, I mean, there's no time limit here, but they will go back to a five-day work week, which is good for the residents, so they can get in touch with everybody who's part of any city department, like even the mayor, even on a Friday. Imagine. They might get more work done for the city, too, since the people have to be there 5 days. They both said they're transparent. Hicks Clayton said because she does a lot of social media posting. And Pileco says that he always has his door open as mayor. I want to meet with him face-to-face. So I assume that's his door to his office 4 days a week right now, not his home. Don't want to assume. You know, I'm in favor of elected officials having some privacy. Let's see. Six council candidates. Where'd they stand? Maxwell said the biggest challenge would be clearing up the city and road repairs. Constance said managing the budget, along with making decisions based on needs of residents. Wenzel insisted that improving police, fire, and public works department was his priority, and the city website, which has never been as good as Dearborn's, I know. Not up to date the last time I checked, and not easy to use. Not complete is the biggest problem, I think. Badoon said getting people involved in transparency is his biggest challenges. Oshansky said communication at city council meetings between members and residents needs improvement. Don't know what that specific is. And Mallard referenced the city's budget and services as areas he would focus on. And for the future of the city, each candidate had different ideas, and we don't have time to cover the rest of those briefly stated there. I did want to mention, again, the two big sessions for a lot of candidates for the City of Dearborn, which will be on the City of Dearborn website, probably under CDTV On Demand. You have to scroll to the bottom of the page, but definitely something you want to do. But let me grab my notes from the meetings this week. Yep, here we go. All right, so Monday night was city clerk candidates and mayoral candidates. And those who showed up for city clerk candidates, there was, I think it was all four of them, Shimizu, it's John Joseph Shimizu, Nufia Haidar, George Duraney, our former representative from this area to Lansing, and Adam Ali, or Ali, A-L-E-E. Okay. So, why should... well, they stated their backgrounds, and... Shimizu said that he formed his work with United Airlines. He didn't make the joke about not being the person beating up the passenger and pulling him off the plane. He didn't do a joke for that. But he seemed like an amiable person to me. So he's a nice guy, which means he wouldn't make a sort of a bad joke like that. He wouldn't want to bring up the reference either to the bad image United Airlines has. Let's see, Nufia Haidar, she evidence that she'd been part of the PTA council. She's got a master's in public administration. She wants to move the clerk's office into the 21st century, which we're already in. I guess the implication is we're not up to date. George Duraney said that he's someone that the city knows and trusts. And he also implied that he knows a lot of people that could help in terms of votes, the whole democracy of our country is not just getting people to vote, which requires education, but also training of the people in city clerk's office at the polls, and of course having fair counts, and that he felt he had contacts in state government that would help. Although I have to say, state government is run by Republicans, and according to the bills that they've passed and have tried to pass recently, they want voter suppression. Okay? They want more IDs and more restrictions, and they don't want to pass anything that's going to facilitate what I call democracy. So I'm not sure, even if he has contacts in Lansing, if they're Republicans, they may not be on his side in trying to, in, from what he said, trying to increase the ease of voting and even the intelligence of voters, that they may not, he may not find a way to get any support from outside the city for that happening, nonetheless. And Adam Ali, A-L-E-E, his background is international economics. He's a consultant for a foreign government, I believe, an economic consultant. He's also a broker, he says. Of course, not knowing the term, since I'm not in business, a broker of what? Broker of stocks? You can broker a lot of things, I think. So anyway, that was an interesting, presentation by those candidates. A lot of them said they need to hire more bilingual people in the city clerk's office. That was stated by Haidar. And education, promotion, diversity, they all pretty much said the same thing there. So that's going to be a difficult to figure out who to vote for in terms of any specifics, because of course these are not debates, because they give them only a minute for an introduction, a minute to respond to each question, and 2 minutes at the end to sum up. And it's just not enough to understand really what they're talking about or why they, you know, what diversity. We need diversity. What do you mean by that? You know, you're going to hire people that are not as well qualified as somebody else just because they have a different skin color or a different religion? Now, objectively, I can understand the value of having bilingual or even trilingual. You know, there's Spanish-speaking people here in Dearborn, too, on the at the polls, at least, if not in the clerk's office. So I can understand that. There are some people that speak languages other than the top three I just mentioned. I mentioned English, didn't I? Yes, that goes without saying. Well, let's move to the mayoral candidates quickly. Those attending, Thomas Tefelsky, who is the number two person on city council, was the city council president, if you will, the number one person in vote getter for a couple of terms. He is not running for the council again. He's only running for mayor. Jim Pirelli, who's got a public relations background, I think. And he did talk about, he thought the city of Dearborn should change its image. Didn't say how. But of course, changing images and making images is part of public relations. But he didn't mention that connection. Of course, our current mayor, John B. O'Reilly Jr., was there. And I think we know his background. And Hakeem Fakhouri, who admitted on a stand that he has had many disputes, disagreements, and I think he even implied, at least, certain animosity towards actions taken by Mayor O'Reilly over the last decade or so in terms of his investments or efforts to invest and develop in West Dearborn, which he was not able to bring into complete fruition. Is that what you'd say? I think maybe part of his investments did work out, but some of the major ones didn't. Maybe all of them didn't. Finally, the city council felt they'd given him enough time and sort of pulled his priority hold on the properties since he hadn't developed them. They pulled that from him. And that was a couple of years ago when that was kind of finalized. But sounds to me, of course, from what he said, that he's running pretty much against Mayor O'Reilly, sort of a grudge match. I'm not overstating, and that's okay, I think. I mean, if he felt there were things wrong with the way the city operated and Mayor O'Reilly, you know, they didn't allow him to make direct references because, they, in fact, they cut him off once, the moderator for League of Women Voters, that you can't do personal attacks. And he said, it's not an attack, it's a fact. Okay, I think there is a difference between personal attack, which is closer to slander in public if you're speaking out loud, same thing as libel. And so it's not defamation of character, I don't think, if you say someone acted inappropriately in their political office. But I understand what she was getting at, because I don't allow candidates to talk about the other candidates at all. I don't say whether it's an attack or what it is, but if they come on the show, I tell them they can't talk about the other candidates at all. They can talk about the city government and policies in general, but they can't talk specifically about any other candidates, including incumbents. Okay. So that's the four candidates we had for mayor. Oh, Edward Binkley, who's been on the ballot before, did send a brief statement about what he believes in. Just a list of a number of specifics, and but he didn't show up. No. Okay. Moving down the line here. They did not have, because they had mayoral candidates, and so everybody mentioned different things. Most people said they've got families, and they've lived here a long time, and they love the community. One person said, Mr. Burley said he didn't like when he saw some people falling asleep at the city council meetings, on the city council. And they don't meet, you know, at midnight, folks. They, you know, 7 p.m. or whatever, but could have a long day. They have all those video monitors, you know, so if you just watch the video, you don't necessarily see people nodding off unless you're sitting in the audience, because that's, you know, as soon as your camera comes back on you, you sort of perk up and start smiling and, you know, playing to the camera. But they can't have the camera on everybody all the time when they're taping the shows. And so I have seen a few council members, no names here, of course, nodding off too. Everybody commented on what great police and fire departments we have. They didn't mention, however, if we should increase their salaries. Several people said, and again, there's kind of agreement here, get more police into the neighborhoods. We want them on the beat in our neighborhoods. And of course, again, there's a trend that I've talked about here, and that is, do we really want please, visibly in our neighborhoods on a regular basis, like hourly or whatever? Do we want them in our schools all the time? Do we want them, I don't know, at Fairlane Town Center? Do we want to replace all the security guards in Dearborn with Dearborn police and have them out there all the time? You know, I don't know. I think that's the wrong trend. That's the wrong approach to things. But some people were asking about, were saying that they want more police and more in the neighborhoods. A few of the council members, and we can't get into them now because time is up, said they wanted more police in the neighborhoods also. And to stop, several council people said, got to stop those speeders. Those people are speeding through the neighborhoods. They should get ticketed right away. Well, how can you do that unless you have the police standing there all the time? But yes, you shouldn't drive over the speed limit, which is 25. And I think in some neighborhoods with a lot of cars parked on the sides, kids can run out into the street quickly or all of a sudden appear, if you will. And even 25 is too fast. But I think that goes into driver ed training and attitude. Whoever these people are that are driving those speeds, it's not a matter of punishment. It's a matter of sensitizing them to their responsibility, their human responsibility, I think. But how do you do that? It's a question. All right. And this is the new WHFR Journal coming to a close today. We're going to go over Koronek's responses to the council members' statements from the League of Women Voters Forum from this last Wednesday. And maybe we'll all have a chance to look at the videos of those. Again, the city of Dearborn should have two separate videos, one from last Monday for the clerks and the mayors, and also from Wednesday night for the council candidates. And last night was the Dearborn Heights candidate forum for clerks. I don't think they're using a clerk this time, but for mayor and for council out there. It's Jay Koronek, and have a great weekend. Hope to see you at Ladies Sing the Blues. We're going to start Highway 61 with Kitty Love with the announcement about Lady Sings the Blues. This is Sunday from 2 to 6 p.m. indoors at the historic Hastings Street Ballroom, a fundraiser for WHFR, as Kitty Love's voice tells you on this announcement here. And so her show will start as soon as the announcement finishes. Take care, and again, I hope we see you at the blues concert. It's going to be great. Get up.
Please join WHFR for summertime fun with great music, good food, as WHFR.FM. Independent non-commercial radio 89.3 and the Detroit Blues Society present Ladies Sing the Blues at Hastings Street Ballroom, 2 p.m. till 6 p.m. on Sunday, June 25th. Thornetta Davis. Liza Neals with special guest Howard Glazier. Trying to put a jinx on me.